Reset the podcast is brought to you in association with Liars, the non-alcoholic spirits brand. Whether it's low alcohol or no alcohol, Liars helps you enjoy your classic favourite cocktails.
Hello everyone, my name is Suki Thompson. Welcome to Reset the podcast. A place for you to get some inspiration and advice to help you live a more fulfilling work life. I do hope that your journey to feel more connected, more inspired, just a bit more energized starts here. Take a moment now with me to reset. In this week's Reset the Podcast, I talk to a man who lives and breathes creativity, so much so that innovation plays a starring role in his job title. Toby Whitmoyer is Bacardi's Global Marketing and Innovation Officer. Together, we talk about how Chili and his father played a defining role in his early life and why Toby has a lifelong love of learning. During our time together, we chat about what really energizes him and why he feels it's so important to bring your whole best self, as he puts it, to work. Learning new things has been the lifeblood of Toby's own well-being journey, but so has his newfound love of physical exercise, a consequence, as for many of us, of a global pandemic. It's been a time to reset for Toby, and I hope you'll enjoy listening to his perspectives on life and work in lockdown. Hello, Toby. It's lovely to see you today. How are you getting on?
I'm getting on very well. Great to see you as well, Suki. Real pleasure to speak with you today.
So, Toby, we're going to talk about a number of things today, particularly around your role as a leader, what it's like being part of a big international group like Bacardi, but also living in a different country, how that's been during the pandemic, how that's impacted your leadership, and then a little bit about some of the big issues that have challenged all of us over the last year and your responses, both as a human being, but also Bacardi as well. Toby, let's start by talking a little bit about you. You're American. Where were you born and what was your upbringing like?
Well, I was born in Pennsylvania at an undefined earlier date. I've spent a lot of my life in the U.S., but have traveled and worked around the world. So I'm currently, I'm obviously at Bacardi. I've been here in the U.K. on an expatriate assignment for the last 3 years. The first year and a half of which I was mostly on an airplane, and the last year and a half of which I've been mostly in my house, based on what's happened over that time period. So, I've had the good fortune to work in, Spain, Mexico, lived in Chile for quite some time, but primarily in the US and then latterly here in the UK.
And you've been in the drinks industry because before Bacardi, you were in Diageo. I'm fascinated. My background, my family business was Beefeater Gin, so I come from that. My son Sam, at 21, has just gone to work in Edinburgh for a whiskey company. I'm fascinated. What attracted you to working in the drinks industry?
It is an exciting business. Lots of people do get, very, very passionate about the business. And really, I had a personal connection at first, really from my father just being a huge wine connoisseur, just really loving the business, as a collector and as a consumer of wines. And that was something I sort of grew up around. So after university, I went traveling for a year, which is quite rare in America. I know it's a quite, well-trodden path here in the UK, and ended up in Chile and found myself working in the wine business. And that was kind of how I got my start in this category. And I did some other things in between, but eventually, as you mentioned, came back to it through Diageo a number of years ago. So in and out of it, once you get started in the wine and spirits business, it's very difficult to leave because it's a very compelling space with lots of great people.
Yeah, it is. It is a very compelling space. But, you know, it's quite a challenging environment to be in, isn't it? There's a lot of changes in legislation. There's been a lot of focus on alcohol in particular. What's that been like for you as you've kind of grown up through the industry and particularly now as a leader?
I mean, it's quite different also by sort of culture and geography. So, you know, in the United States, there's obviously with the history of prohibition and a very different cultural attitude towards alcohol and alcohol consumption than even you find in the UK. But what's been interesting is that really that has changed over the time that I've been in the business, where by now I think there's a much broader acceptance of the responsible use of alcohol as kind of a key piece of a healthy and vibrant lifestyle that helps to drive, you know, social engagement, community engagement, and all those things that I think have come into relief in the last, you know, year and a half, as we really all learned what it's like to not have the ability to socialize with others. And so I think actually it's been a fascinating time lately to see really the role that responsible consumption of alcohol can have in positive mental health and wellness.
Yes, yes. And we'll come on and talk a little bit more about that and what you've been doing at Bacardi and that. You know, we talk a lot at Let's Reset about the seven needs of well-being and performance. And one of them is around, you know, broadly creativity. And we'll talk a bit later around creativity from a marketing point of view. But it's also about kind of learning and teaching yourself and learning new things. And, I, you know, I'm fascinated. You have been to do kind of more schools and universities and degrees and everything up to even being at Harvard Business School. You feel like somebody who loves learning, who loves education.
It's definitely something that I get excited and passionate about. I'm probably overeducated for the work that I do. But I think, you know, always to me, and I'm sure to a lot of people, part of what helps to give me energy and drive me forward is if I'm in a situation where I am learning. Right? Whether you can have an impact. And so I think something like the wine and spirits business, the beverage alcohol business, is constantly evolving and has become much more dynamic in the last 5 to 10 years, even more so in the last two. So I think the opportunity for continued learning and engagement, if anything, has increased over that time. So certainly the formal, you know, educational background I've had has been useful, but as always, it's kind of what you do and how you show up and how you lead. And that really comes from experience at the end of the day.
Yeah. And you just said, you know, particularly in the last couple of years, I guess because of the pandemic and other things, tell us a little bit about that, those kind of moments of reset. What's happened in the industry that maybe has surprised you the most or has really been impacted by the pandemic?
I think what's really fascinating in the, with the pandemic is how it's played out so differently for our business around the world. So, you know, the United States, we've had an extraordinarily successful business run as a reaction to the pandemic, as people actually, you know, stopped going out. And obviously for the entree, that was very difficult, the on-premise, but ended up people treating themselves at home and actually ended up purchasing a lot more because they were cooking, they were making themselves nicer cocktails. And so actually our US business has really flourished. Whereas if you think about, say, Southern Europe, Italy, or Greece, et cetera, where most of the consumption is out, right? Out in the cafes and the bars. When things were shut down, our business was severely impacted. And then, you know, global travel retail, which is a huge piece of it. You can imagine all those purchases happening at Heathrow and duty free or cruise lines, et cetera. All of that just stopped completely. So it's been a little bit of a window into what's been happening in each of those cultures around the world. So that's been fascinating how different actually it can be. You know, we're in a fortunate position that we do trade in many markets around the world. So places where our business was severely impacted, we're buttressed by those that things went a bit better, fortunately.
Yeah. And from a kind of marketing point of view, presumably then you've had to talk to customers in different ways. You know, there's been a greater focus on online, on e-commerce. How have you changed your focus globally on marketing and then particularly with the people that you've had?
Sure. I mean, it's a great question. It's been very, very dynamic. I would say first and foremost, and we've always been very engaged with our on-premise you know, partners. The yeah. servers, the bartenders, the wait staff, the operators. In the beginning of the pandemic last year, you know, we like many of our competitors, invested a lot of time and energy in trying to take care of our partners in the on-trade. absolutely critical for us in terms of helping them out when they were in a particularly rough spot. So that was something that we really focused on in the early days. Very, very quickly, as we saw what happened, I think two things came to the fore. One was an explosion in e-commerce, which this business has been slower than most consumer products categories to really adopt e-commerce. And I think we had last year, 5 years worth of growth in 5 months. And so everyone in the industry has had to scramble to get ahead of that. And you've seen lots of, you know, exciting activity happening in that space because of it. Mm-hmm. I think then there's been a huge, because of the changing consumer behaviors, there's been a real focus on obviously channel shifting from drinking out of home to drinking at home, but also a lot of product innovation that's been driven by that. In particular, the rise of ready-to-drink convenience options for pre-made cocktails has absolutely exploded around the world, particularly in the U.S., but in many markets. And those trends kind of go together with, you know, convenience, e-commerce, portability, greater focus on hygiene. And all of this has sort of been accelerated. As many people have said, the pandemic, it wasn't that totally new things happened. It was that it really accelerated some trends that were already there. And we probably leaped forward 5 years on both innovation and e-commerce over the past, you know, 12 to 18 months.
Yes. I mean, it's so interesting, isn't it? I think particularly that piece around cocktails, as you say, those ready-to-made drinks. But the thing actually that did surprise me is obviously my son Sam was in the middle of doing his WSET courses. And they were unbelievably slow to going, okay, we can't now physically get there. We can now work virtually. And I think, you know, maybe that's partly because it was in the UK and they were struggling with trying to get alcohol to do the tastings, to do the learning and the teaching, and then the whole exam piece. But I was quite fascinated, particularly with some of the other work that we've been doing and how quickly we moved to doing things in a virtual way, actually how slow the whole education side of the industry has been. I don't know if you've seen that at all.
You know, we haven't really seen that with outside providers. I mean, what I spend a lot of my time on is planning, capability building is a significant chunk of my role. And actually, would completely echo the thought, you know, it's been amazing how quickly we've had to adapt to virtual. And also that there's actually significant positives that come from that. Everyone's talking about Zoom fatigue and we all feel it. And I'm sure that's a big piece of people understanding how to navigate the new world, particularly when we think about mental health and wellness. But actually, you know, what we did last year in our annual planning process, which we ran sort of in the beginning of the pandemic during the summertime, we went to a fully virtual planning process with something we called the Growth Hacks, where we took what had been a 5-week process and turned it into a 5-day process, completely virtual. It took a bit of fearlessness to jump in and do it because no one knew if we could pull it off. But actually, it was a massive success because we were able to pull a much broader set of stakeholders from across the business, different functions, into these meetings to get more and sort of more interesting voices helping to build the brand plans in a way that didn't require them to jump on a plane and out of the office or out of their market for a week. And then secondly, we were able to move very quickly to get groups of people together to really spark the creativity that comes from, you know, having those diverse groups together for the periods of time that we were able to pull them. And they didn't have to spend, you know, 3 weeks in a room with each other trying to do this. They could come in and out as necessary based on kind of the hack methodology that we were using. So we were amazed by how well it worked. And actually, in the depths of the beginning of the lockdowns, it was a huge tonic for our people to all get together online, have a bit of fun with each other, and really, you know, have that sense of community and family, which is such a critical value at Bacardi. So we actually found it to be a real plus versus what we expected and what we've done in the past.
That's so interesting. I mean, to go from 5 weeks to 5 days, that's, and you know, if you allow for, okay, you're not going to travel, that's extraordinary. How were you able to do that? I mean, what did you just literally leave bits out, or, you know, how does it work?
I think when you have to show up and you know, first and foremost, I would say we did a test and learn approach. So we did, you know, 5-6 different regional growth hacks around the world with our different regions, and everyone got better based on the learnings from the prior one. So it wasn't like we had everything figured out from day one. And I think that's been part and parcel of the last year and a half for many people, is having to embrace agility and a little bit more fearlessness, just because you absolutely have to in order to succeed. So what was interesting was we were much more prepared up front. We tried to get pre-work done. So I don't know if the total amount of work was less. We did more work up front. We structured the process, and everybody had to focus with cameras on for that certain amount of time. And then really, after a certain point, we had more people there in the beginning. We had our senior leaders running these sessions. And so the teams didn't have to go build a plan, then get the senior leader feedback and approval. They actually all worked on it together. So I would say we short-circuited a lot of the inefficiency that we had previously, particularly around, you know, ensuring that vertically in the organization, people were bought in from the beginning. And I think that more than anything helped to speed us up.
Yeah, I mean, that's so interesting you say that, because I think always from the outside, it's easy, isn't it, in these sort of large organizations to say, look, if only the leaders would come together and make some decisions up front, things could work much more quickly. But clearly, you know, through that sort of test and learn, you've shown that to really work. I'm interested, is that a methodology that you're going to be able to sustain going forward? And particularly as we get now into this more sort of fluid way of working, where people will be back in a physical office for some of the week at least.
So we're in the middle of running the second iteration of those growth hacks. And actually we chose to go virtual. It would have been difficult, frankly, to do it in person. We could have gone hybrid. But we actually chose to keep doing it virtually because we thought that would actually bring us the best results. And I think what was critical this year is, again, we sort of teed it up from the beginning as this is all about progress, not perfection. And I think that's absolutely critical to set the frame, because that gives people the permission to, you know, ask the open questions, to say things, to throw ideas out there, because you've set up and we've constantly reinforced, we're not looking for you to be perfect on camera. This is a workshop format where we all need to figure this out together. And I think having our senior leads, you know, kicking off these sessions, kind of sharing some of those ideas. We always shared sort of, how have you been agile or had to be fearless in the last 6 to 12 months? And I think the fact that, as I'm sure for many people, people have gotten ironically, a much faster window into people's home lives, has humanized the process a little bit. And so, you know, we've all been there. We all know what happens when, you know, childcare falls through or someone has to be homesick or, you know, multiple things happening. And I think that sense of sort of humanness has helped to give people the trust and the confidence to just bring their all to a situation, which again, was about progress, not perfection.
I like that. Progress, not perfection, is great. And I love the fact that you ask people about being fearless. What have you done that's been particularly fearless in the last 18 months?
It's funny. I use the term fearless on purpose. Bacardi has three cultural values that we really ascribe to: family, fearless, and founders. As a 159-year-old family-owned company and a very collegial group at that, you know, family is in our DNA, and it's how we treat one another. We even call each other primos, which is Spanish for cousin, you know, rather than colleague or associate or something like that. Fearless is an aspiration for the organization. You know, as a traditional challenger in the industry, you know, to be fearless and bold is incredibly important. And then the founder's mentality of really treating every dollar, you know, as your own, and being entrepreneurial, but in a true sense of really feeling super responsible. So, I mean, actually the hack situation that we just talked about was probably one of the more fearless things we've had to do, because, you know, it took myself and the team pushing that forward with a lot of skepticism in the organization that we could pull that off. And we put it out there, and it was funny because I won't name the tech platform, but we had sort of set up and went through everything that could possibly go wrong in the first session, except that we got going and our tech platform collapsed immediately. And we had, you know, 200 people in the States on the line, a couple, you know, 20 or 30 people over here in the UK, and our platform crashed. But you know what? We had done enough prep that we immediately flipped to Teams and did it sort of in a very different fashion. And it actually came off fine. And that actually obviously enabled us to talk about agility, about progress, not perfection, about, you know, we're going to do the best that we can do here. And here's a great example of that. And so we were able to rotate very, very quickly. So I think as a team, that's one thing that we've done, I think, in the last year that's been particularly notable.
Yeah. I love that. That's really good. It's a great manifestation of it, isn't it? But I guess, you know, for you living over here in the UK, presumably, and some of your family are still in the States, how has that felt being, you know, in a country that's not the country that you've spent most of your life in?
Yeah, it's been really interesting. You know, I would certainly say that my time in London has not been as expected. As I mentioned before, I spent the first year and a half flying around the world, literally all over the place, and then the last year and a half kind of on lockdown. So it has been you know, fascinating, and certainly I've gained a much deeper appreciation for the culture here, because you kind of understand under duress when the chips are down, how people react. I think you get a window into the culture much more quickly. You know, clearly it's been uncomfortable to be so far away from home during this time, particularly with the travel restrictions, with, you know, older parents and you know, extended family and friends. So I would be lying if I said that wasn't somewhat difficult over the past 18 months. We've been fortunate, you know, here that we've got enough space that we could be locked down. And, you know, my kids were taken pretty good care of in terms of the distance learning and things. So I feel fortunate, but it certainly has had its moments for sure.
Yes, absolutely. I think all of us have felt a bit like that. You know, you said that family and the founders and this sort of sense of family at Bacardi is really important. Do you have a, I don't know if it's a philosophy or a program about belonging at Bacardi? Tell me a little bit about that, Toby.
You know, we absolutely do. You know, we're an interesting, a very interesting business in the sense that it is a sixth generation family company, and the family are still the sole owners of the business. And I think that ethos permeates, you know, through the entire business. And so, if you come to a Bacardi event or walk through an office, you know, you'll see highly sociable, highly affiliative people that, you know, enjoy one another's company. And that's a key piece of the wine and spirits business as well. It is about bringing joy. And I think people, you know, get excited about that. So we, in this situation, obviously, a lot of our, I think maybe the biggest challenge was a lot of that family feeling was in a very dispersed business, was from people coming together, traveling, getting together at meetings, offsites, market visits, things like that. All of that shut down, obviously. And I think it's been interesting and a big challenge for the organization. How do we keep building the culture in spite of that? And out of that came the idea and a lot of the feedback from our primos about, you know, some of the struggles they were having at the same time as with the Black Lives Matter movement and everything else, and a heightened awareness of inclusiveness and the power of diversity and the importance of those issues. And out of all this has come a program that we're putting in place called Belonging at Bacardi, which is really just a more, I would say, intentional approach towards ensuring that, you know, we really are listening to our fellow primos and really meeting them where they are, and understanding what the challenges are. And then it's an attempt really to figure out how do we create a new better. And that's, you know, this program hopefully will get us to a place where I don't think anyone knows what 2022 is going to hold, but if we've had honest, forthright conversations and really listened to one another and tried to lay out, again, sort of a test and learn approach to what that new better might look like, hopefully that's going to help to drive a greater sense of belonging and culture at Bacardi, regardless of what's happening with the pandemic and, you know, government regulations, et cetera.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? We were having, we were doing a workshop this morning, and we had a number of both brands and some agency chief execs there as well. And I think there were two things that I thought were interesting. One was, in some ways, cultures up until the pandemic that are very good and very strong are sort of implicit. They might have, you know, like you, three words that sort of sum up what you're trying to do and where you come from. But the actual culture itself is the thing that happens when kind of nobody's looking. The problem is when you don't have people all together all the time, that culture is more difficult to communicate. It's more difficult to touch and feel. And it's more difficult when you've got new people coming into it to be explicit about it. And I just wonder whether you've seen some of that, and maybe belonging at Bacardi is part of that articulation.
I mean, we were fortunate in that, we'd done a lot of work on our culture in the previous several years with our new CEO, Mahesh, who came in about 3 or 4 years ago. And so he put a real focus on really articulating the three Fs and bringing that to the fore. And so what was implicit became explicit. And so it gave us, I think, a framework to lean into as this, all of the events of last year really unfolded. And so, through that time, we've been able to kind of really count on that and lean on that as an inspiration point. But certainly, that does change because people leave, new people join. When you're not together in the office, particularly in a creatively driven, brand-driven business where, strategic ideation is absolutely critical as well, it does become harder. But then I also think, many things became apparent for many people in the last year. And I think for us, it was just particularly around Black Lives Matter, diversity and inclusion, having more conversations and understanding that as good as our intentions were and are, maybe we hadn't heard everything. Maybe we weren't being as proactive as we would want to be. And so I think the organizations responded very well in terms of saying, okay, look, let's step back here and really understand what's happening and how we, really can move forward in this area, which is so critical for both our people and for society in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, and I don't know how you felt, it's certainly, again, like for so many people, and again, we've seen it again this last weekend with the football at Wembley at the end of the cup final. There's some things that you sort of know, and we hope that are getting better, but clearly racial abuse, the lack of inclusion, it is still a big, big issue. And I wonder whether as an American in the UK, you see that and you feel that. And I wonder how it makes you feel about being in this country, because obviously Black Lives Matter is a global thing. But I wonder whether you get a feeling of it from a different perspective, maybe from living through it here rather than maybe in the States.
And that's where I think it is difficult to be in lockdown. And actually, I'm in day four of isolation post travel to the U.S. So I feel like I'm in lockdown again. It's been I can read the news in the last year and kind of see how people have reacted, but I haven't actually been out and about in the way to really truly understand it. I do think there's obviously a very different context and reaction between the U.S., where so much energy has been. I think hopefully positive energy, but also some challenges in the past year has really been spent on this particular issue. Same thing in the UK. It just comes to life in a very different way here. And I think our histories are quite different. So I can't feel like I can really comment deeply about the situation in the UK because I've only been here for a couple of years, but completely respect the fact that these issues are being brought to the fore here and people are trying to deal with them in a really proactive way, which I think is important.
Yeah, yeah. We can move on a little bit further into, diversity, inclusion, and then well-being of the people. We've talked a lot about how hard everyone's worked. You've talked about some of the brilliant, the hack and some of the creative challenges. But we've also seen, a lot of people have found this time, it's been very hard. Some people feel very lonely. Some people have actually worked so much because it's been relentless. I just wonder how your teams have been feeling, how people at Bacardi how's it impacted you as a business?
Yeah, I think, we went through, I think like many people, kind of a burst of productivity in the beginning as we were all surprised by how much we could get done. A business virtually. And really, our amazing operations colleagues who were still physically creating the product every day and our sales folks that are out there dealing with our customers, a lot of people were on the front line and out in the physical world. A lot of the folks in the marketing group and the other support functions were, remote and spending a ton of time on Teams, on their computers. And I think And you've seen this, in the news, I think across the board, but being able to draw the line between home life and work life, very, very difficult when you're working at home. Not everybody had the physical, many people didn't have the physical space necessary to do that. I think particularly people with young children, when they had to also really be the educator and the teacher, was quite difficult. So we've had a lot of challenges in the last year on that front. And I think we, our people really rallied to the occasion and have delivered amazingly over time, but there's also certainly significant instances of people that are tired and are letting that be known. And I think diminishing returns on living on Zoom and living on team are definitely there. And I think this summer is actually critical for people to take a break and actually just enjoy themselves off screen. And I think everyone's gotten a heightened awareness of how important that is. And I think, you know, in the UK, even more so, and Europe, even more so than the US, there's always been, I think, a greater reverence and respect for the importance of truly disconnecting and taking vacation. But I think everyone's gotten a much heightened awareness of the fact that it's critical to step away and have some time for yourself, for your family, for enjoyment and engagement. So I personally hope that everybody, not just at Bacardi, but you know, around the world, has the opportunity to take a break this summer, just to kind of recharge their batteries a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. What are you going to do? Are you going to take a break?
I'm actually taking my daughter on a college tour in the U.S. For part of the time, and then looking to see some family, and hopefully find a place to take a bit of a break in the States in August. So, but many other millions of people have that idea. So I've got to find someplace good.
Yes, I know. It's quite hard. It's quite hard. And when you take that break, how do you check in? Do you go, look, actually, I'm going to really not check my emails, I'm not going to be contactable unless it's an emergency, or do you do a little bit every day? What do you actually do?
You know, everyone's, I think, a little bit different about this one, Suki. Personally, and this has come to me over time from learned experience, I used to check in quite a bit, and then you realize that you never really get to disconnect. So my personal rule and what I try to state to my team, both in terms of myself stepping away, but when they step away, is when we're working, let's be on, let's give it our best. And when you're off, give it your best of not working. And so I like to disconnect, realistically, not more than like 5-6 days where you really can disconnect without checking. And obviously if something truly critical is happening, someone's going to give you a call, and I leave instructions to that level. But I think for most people, they can take a week off without checking their email. Particularly if you've set things up ahead of time so that people are ready for that. And so I think, taking those breaks is critical. I think combining that with spending some of that time in nature, or really sort of in a different environment where you feel like you're taking a break. Ultimately, I think we've all come to understand that really actually disconnecting is critical for then coming back and being much more truly productive, rather than just getting things done.
Yeah. And do you know what? I think hearing somebody in your position say that is so helpful, because so what often happens is we hear people say it's really important you take the time off, but actually they don't do it themselves. And therefore, nobody else really feels that they can do that. So you need to really lead by example, don't you?
No, I think that's absolutely critical. And I certainly have that example with the folks that I work for here, which I think is helpful. It really does require everybody to step up and understand that they're modeling the behavior, and that's going to actually help make things go. That being said, if you set up a situation where people genuinely believe and trust that, if something does happen that's mission critical, people will respond, and they're going to give it their best, and they're going to understand, because it's genuine. It's not, fighting fires or doing things just to be show that you're available. And so I think genuineness and authenticity are critical for building that trust.
Yes. And, genuineness and authenticity are two words that are used an awful lot, but I think, they are so important when we think about leadership. And I wonder for you, Toby, how would you describe the way that you lead your teams?
I think, and this is something that I've learned over time. I think some people might be born as great natural leaders. I think most of us have to learn how to do it. And really at the end of the day, I think it's about trying to understand the folks that you work with, and value them. An old boss of mine said, you know me, value me, you know, understand where I'm coming from, what my issues are, what my motivations are, and then ensure that we you're as transparent as you can be so that we can establish a shared objective. Yeah. And then help your teams to deliver against that objective and try and give them both the space to do it and the credit for the work that they're doing. And I think those are really, really critical components. And then I think, you know, over the last year, year and a half, probably two pieces that have become even more important is over-communication. There really isn't such a thing as communicating too much, particularly in this situation where people are facing all the issues they were at home. Absolutely critical. And then I think bringing an even more human approach towards your leadership is really critical. And I think that's something that on Zoom and on Teams in the beginning, to be forthcoming about some of the challenges that you were facing at home or, you know, in your environment, or even, you know, I was sending pictures of my dog around like the first month on our WhatsApp group, having our WhatsApp group that was more than just work related stuff for my particular team. Those things are really critical. You've heard it from other people. It's not a new thought, but at the end of the day, you know, we're all human beings. And if you got great people on your team, they want to do a really good job, but they also respond, I think, much better to a situation that is transparent, that's based in, you know, genuine concern for their welfare. And I think communication has been a critical component recently. It always is. But even more so.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. And just give us a bit of an example of the kind of things for over-communication, because I think everyone says it, but it's interesting to hear what different people do and mean by that.
Yeah, I think having the, I don't know if it's the word is discipline, but, you know, we set up from the beginning for my team, for example, you know, a weekly team call that was, you know, sacrosanct. Like you'd go on there. A lot of times it's not about work necessarily, a little bit of, you know, fun banter back and forth. We have it as a standing piece every week. Sometimes it feels like, oh, I don't think we really need to meet. And in that case, you know, we'll have a 15-minute conversation about various things, and then we'll break and give people the time back. But I think just having that connectivity on a really regular basis, you know, I've found also in order to help kind of help the team, but also help to kind of manage the business moving forward, to have more frequent and shorter meetings, and, you know, one-on-ones every week with my key reports, a team meeting every week that's a standing piece. I'm sure sometimes some people come to those things and think, do we really need to meet right now? Because it feels like it. But actually, that continual engagement, I think, has really created a more tight-knit feeling amongst the team. And we've been fortunate, we've been able to get together personally, you know, as things have opened up for lunches outdoors. We just went on a boat trip up the Thames from Henley, which was great fun. Yeah, nice. Last Friday. Yeah, really nice. And so I think, you know, taking those moments as well to celebrate the successes we've had and just, you know, put the work aside and enjoy one another's company is critical.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I love that. And it is nice, isn't it? It's good that you can get back together a little bit now and maybe be outside and do that sort of check-in. And I think so many leaders have said to me, you know, like you, when that there isn't necessarily the business imperative to meet or have the conversation, the bit around how are you really is so important and so critical, particularly when you're not with people face to face.
Sure.
You know, I mean, I think try hard, don't we?
We do. Yeah. I mean, I think there's a real difference between, I don't know, I've taken to calling it thin productivity versus rich productivity. And, you know, the thin productivity of getting your tasks done, having your Zoom or Teams meetings and delivering the work versus having a much richer outcome from having the right conversations, making 1+1=3. And I think that's where some of the limitations of the virtual world come in, particularly in creative businesses. I think it's critical that we find a way in the new better to get together for those right moments of collaborative work, where the output of the group is going to be much stronger than an individual's output, but then also give people the respect to have them go off and do their focused work in whatever way works best for them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm interested in the, you know, you talk about the new better. One of the other thing we're hearing in this conversation is that some people are desperate to go back to work into a physical building. Other people actually would prefer not to. And in a way, they're now used to not being in a physical building, so they don't want to go back to the office. And there's a real kind of dilemma there. And how do we both encourage create a different environment, but also maybe even just say, look, do you know what? You're going to have to come back and try this. Where are your people? Is there a bit of everyone there? How are you thinking about getting people back to work collaboratively?
Sure. No, I mean, it's a great question. I know everyone's dealing with this issue around the world. And certainly, you know, as a country that operates in many markets, it's kind of specific to the geography where people are. So I'll speak to London, since we have our, you know, we have several offices in the UK, but the London office is the one I'm attached to. We're trying to figure it out like everyone else. And so, you know, we've had the office open for those that truly couldn't work at home since things started to open up. We have surveyed our people about what they'd like to do. And to your point, some people really want to be there often. Some people don't think they need to be there that often at all. And I think what's actually the phase that we're in now is establishing, we've really gone deep and understood what our people want. Now we're trying to figure out what the business needs are. Because ultimately those two have to come together. And actually, if you have an open conversation with your people, they're looking for structure and expectations, you know. What is it the business needs and expects of me? And they're trusting that we're also going to take their best interests at heart because we've heard from them about what works and what doesn't. And like many employers, you know, our future is probably something of a hybrid nature where you've got certain days in the office that are probably, you know, scheduled for collaborative work, and people are going to be free to do their work, their focused work in probably more places than they were before. But also we need to cater for those folks that want to come into the office to do all sorts of their work. So I think, you know, like many, we're going to again, sort of test and learn and figure out what's going to work and what's not going to work. And we won't get it right the very first time. But if we have an honest dialogue and are transparent and communicate with our people on a regular basis, I think, you know, we will get to a much better place.
Yes, I like the framework of, you know, a kind of tight, loose, tight. So a tight idea about this is the parameters you need to work in. Then some loose conversation around what works. You know, how do we get the best out of you to give you the energy, but also the kind of business help and support that you need. And then the tight piece around, you know, what are the outputs that we expect and how are we measuring it? And what do those KPIs look like?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical, because I think particularly in the last, you know, year and a half, people are looking for structure, because that's one thing that the office used to provide, and it's been more difficult recently. And so I think structure, but that freedom in a framework, so that people have the ability to kind of lean into it in the way that's right for them, I think is really important.
Yeah. So then, just finally, Toby, if we look forward, in a year's time. What for you does the next sort of reset look like? What's the element of success that you want to bring together over your learning, maybe in the UK, of the piece before the pandemic, during the pandemic? What does the next bit look like for you?
I think there's a couple of pieces. I think that over communication is something that needs to continue, and it's something which I'm going to certainly take on board. I think the idea that the more of your full self that you can bring to the table, hopefully your best full self, the better it's going to be, and respect that in other people. So I think being even more human, and bringing your full self to work is a really important component of this. And I think that's going to be important, but I also think personal management as well is really critical. So for example, you know, over the last year and a half, I've actually taken the opportunity to, you know, become much more physically fit than I ever was before. You know, I had a personal trainer and was doing that on Zoom, and that's actually helped me immensely. I'd love, as we go to whatever the future is, even if there's business travel, even if there's more commitments, how do I maintain that? Because I think that helps me to be a more effective leader.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you worry about that? Because I think, you know, I've seen a lot of people like you that have had a very international working environment have just said it's been brilliant to get more physical exercise, maybe even a better diet, some more time with my family. But I worry that now I'm going to be traveling again. I'm not sure how I'm going to get the time for it. Have you thought a lot about that?
Sure. And I think, I mean, I'm glad you bring up the family component. I mean, it's been, you know, immensely satisfying in the last year and a half maybe not every single minute of every single day to be able to spend a lot more time with my family. That's been another huge, you know, area of I think benefit of what's happened over the pandemic. That and the sort of better sleep, better able to control your nutrition and diet and physical fitness, absolutely critical. I definitely am thinking about how am I going to manage that more effectively? It comes down to discipline is one thing, but it also comes down to actually putting the right priority on it. And I think that's where it's a step back and saying, if I do this, I will be much more effective and therefore of more benefit to the business and to my team. If I don't do this, I won't be. And so I think you have to look at that in that lens of it's not a nice to have, it's an actually critical component for being able to be effective and be your best self. And so I'm hoping that I'm far enough along that I'll have the discipline to follow through. But I genuinely believe I will, just because it's been such a big piece of my life in the last year.
Yeah, your family probably know. I shouldn't think you've ever spent so much time with your family, have you?
We've spent a lot of time together, for sure. We're a tight-knit family anyways, but even more so now.
Yeah, no, that's great. And it's interesting, isn't that piece about, I was with an international team quite recently, and we were talking exactly the same thing as you, Toby. And then they said, of course, we're going to keep this when we go. And I said, okay, talk me through what you used to do when you traveled and you worked together. And they said, oh yeah, well, we do the workshop or we do the meetings, and then we go to the bar in the hotel, and then we have some dinner, and then we, and I'm like, okay, so which bit of the exercise piece fits into that? And it was really interesting because they just took a moment and went, okay, I'd sort of thought about rethinking our time at work and fluid ways of working, but we hadn't thought about actually how do we make a very different environment when we're all traveling together or we're spending that time. So, you know, there's a lot to think about, isn't there?
For sure. And I think let's see what happens with business travel and in-person engagement. And my assumption is there's going to be a lot less of it, which I think will help in terms of people being able to dedicate the time. From a Bacardi standpoint, beverage alcohol standpoint, we want people to have that great cocktail before dinner and the drinks afterwards, of course. But I think the key is to get up early and get your workout in every day, no matter what. That's probably the answer. Easier said than done, but probably the way to get about it.
Thank you. Toby, look, we talked about family and being fearless. And having a real human approach. It's been lovely to talk to you a little bit more today about some of the great resets that you've done at Bacardi, but even more as you as a leader, you as a family man, and the good things that you're looking forward to in the future, as well as some of the really different ways of working that you've tried and tested over the last 18 months. So thank you for sharing the time with me today.
Suki, thank you very much. Appreciate the time. Love what you're doing with Let's Reset, and was really happy to be able to share with you.
Thanks for listening. If you've enjoyed Reset the podcast, I'd love it if you would forward it to your work colleagues, friends, and family. Reset the podcast is a Let's Reset and Advertising Week global production. Executive producer is Richard Larson, with me, Suki Thompson. Thanks to our sponsor, Liars Non-Alcoholic Spirits, and voiceover artist, Talitha Penny. Music provided by Audio Network.